Blog Talk Radio.
Austin Dillon, driver of the Dallas Chevrolet, and you're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain.
Live from Talladega, Alabama, you're in The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Big thanks to Clay Campbell, Mike Smith, and the entire staff at Martinsville Speedway for allowing us to be part of the Goody's Headache Relief Shot 500 this past weekend. And also a big shout-out to the people that cooked those famous Martinsville hot dogs. They're out of this world delicious. I'm telling y'all because I ate my first one. And thanks, Stephen Wilson, for buying it for me. That was one of the best hot dogs I ever eat. Without further ado, let's get everything going on. We don't have a guest tonight. Sorry about that, but because me and Stephen have been busy all weekend. But I want to bring my good friend and reverend of the show on the Pit Stop, Tim of Spain, Mr. Reverend Joe. Reverend Joe, how you doing this evening, bud?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
We're
doing
great.
I had a really good weekend.
I don't know how you got away with eating only one hot dog. Well, we sort of stayed busy. Stephen bought five or six, and he didn't let me have but one. So that's about how good they are.
When I used to race, I had to be careful because if I ate too many, it got really hard when I was in the race car. After a few laps, the stomach started. So, but those are really good hot dogs, that's for sure.
Yeah, they are. They are. That's what Mike Smith told me. He said, Tim, you better stay in here close to the restroom, son. And I said, yes, sir.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
shall we get started?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Reverend.
Okay. Lord, we come before you today. We thank you for the great and safe trip that they all had up to Martinsville and for the good people there. We ask your blessings upon them. Also want to give a shout out and a happy birthday to my good friend Charlie Daniels, who's turning 78 today. And we thank you, Lord, for all you do. We pray for all those involved with auto racing. They'll have a good week and a safe week. And we pray all these things in the name of Jesus Christ, our Savior. Amen.
Amen. Another great invocation. Thank you very much. And if you want to let our listeners find out where they can follow you at and what all you got going on, you got the floor, bud.
Well, thank you. It's ontrackwithjesus.org is our website. They can follow us there, email us questions and all those types of things. We're pushing right now very hard because we're a few $100 short to make the trip to Phoenix in 2 weeks. And at Phoenix, we're supposed to be picking up some very unique NASCAR memorabilia that we'll be able to raffle off now between now and Christmas to hopefully help us with the beginning of next season's finances. So if everyone would keep that in prayer, and even a few dollars of donation helps. And it's ontrackwithjesus.org, spot there where you can donate if you'd like, and it's all tax deductible. Hate asking for money, but God told us we're supposed to be, because those who give will be blessed, and God blesses us in the same manner with which we give. So anyway, that's what's going on there, and we'll probably give you a call from Phoenix and let you know how that's going. But that's coming up in a couple of weeks. This chase is certainly getting exciting, and I'm looking forward to hopefully being able to race my own little race car on Thanksgiving weekend out here in California, down near the Colorado River. So a lot of junk going on, and believe it or not, I'm hiding in the bathroom of a store right now in order to speak to you without burning up in the sun and being interrupted by a lot of noise. So it's good to talk with you guys. I was going to give you a lecture, by the way. You posted with improper English the other day.
I do that all the time, Reverend Joe. That's just my old redneck southern drawl down there. I get to type it in a hurry, and I end up post it, and then all of a sudden I say, golly. And sometimes I go back and fix it. Sometimes I don't.
You know what's funny is my mom, who passed away at 90 years old 3 years ago, she was a real stickler for English. And she would just give us more grief than you can imagine. And every time I hear someone mess it up, or if I do it myself, I can hear my mom echoing in my ears, give me a lecture.
That's a good one, Reverend Joe. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
But,
well, thanks
again,
Bud.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
We'll talk
Amen.
To you next week.
Yes, sir, and post plenty of pictures from Phoenix.
I will do that. You be blessed and have a great week.
Yes, sir, you too. Y'all be safe going out to Phoenix.
Thank you, you too. Have a good one.
Yes, sir.
Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was our good friend, Reverend Joe from Riverside, California. At this time, I want to bring on my good friend, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com from the great state of Virginia, Mr. Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Stephen, is it still cool up there like it was when we left yesterday morning?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, today it kind of felt a little bit like summer out here, so it wasn't too bad at all, not too hot, and wasn't too bad around here, but it is getting a little chilly here at nighttime. And by the way, I did confirm with Suzanne that we did change the name of the show, and, well, I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Tenfold. And if you can, bud, I know we got a lot to talk about. Let me bring on our meteorologist from ABC 3340, Miss Megan Thomas. We want to bring her on at this time and let her give the race weekend forecast for Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Good evening, Megan. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about y'all?
Tired. 2 weekends in a row about wore us out.
That's what Suzanne just said. She said that y'all are still tired from Martinsville, Talladega, then Martinsville, and headed back.
Yes, ma'am. We're at the house now. We had a great time up there with Stephen Wilson, Clay Campbell, and Mike Smith, everybody up there at Martinsville Speedway. Took real good care of us. It was a little bit cool yesterday morning when we got up and left. Whenever we left yesterday morning, I think it was like 36 degrees. But the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, the Nationwide Series, and the Sprint Cup Series is headed to Dallas-Fort Worth this weekend. Megan, how's it going to look out there?
Well, on Saturday, I know this isn't the race on Sunday, but for everybody traveling Friday into Saturday, Friday's going to be great. It's going to be plenty of sunshine. Saturday, clouds begin to increase, highs in the upper 60s, so it's going to be a little chilly on Saturday. Saturday night, they'll fall to around 51 degrees. It'll be partly cloudy. Then Sunday, we're going to continue to see a mix of sun and clouds out there. High will only be around 71. So, but when you're packed up in there, it'll feel more like the mid-70s, I would assume, and, you know, the exhaust from all the cars. So it'll get probably, I feel like, inside the speedway, probably 75, 76 degrees. And then it'll, overnight on Sunday, clouds will really begin to move in and lows will be in the 60s. And there's a chance for rain on Monday. So if they have travel plans to head back from the race on Monday, you might run into a few stray showers.
All right, sounds good. At least it's not going to rain the race out, Megan. And we had a super weekend this past weekend in Martinsville. It was super.
No, I know. Talladega and in Martinsville, it was beautiful. So
yes, ma'am,
it was. This weekend shouldn't be too terribly bad. Sunday, I mean, it should be fine, just mostly cloudy skies at nighttime, partly sunny during the day, again, highs in the 70s. So not bad, but not as wonderful as the past 2 weekends.
Okay. And next year, I promise I'll bring you back one of them famous Martinsville hot dogs, Megan. I just
perfect.
Didn't have to. Stephen bought 5 or 6, and I didn't get but one.
Oh, goodness. That was greedy.
Megan, once you eat one of them, oh, my God, that's the best hot dog I ever eat. There's some type of special sauce they put on there with, you get the word, I don't know what it is, but it's out of this world.
Yum. I love a good hot dog.
That's right. And, Megan, I know your time is short, and thank you again for coming on with such short notice.
Okay.
But you want to tell all our listeners where they can follow you at on Facebook, Twitter, and everything?
Yeah, Facebook is Meteorologist Megan Thomas, and then Twitter is just MegTom_WX. And I would love new followers. I love pictures from the speedways. I go ahead and retweet them. I showed a couple of them on air in Talladega, so send them my way, and I love to share them on the TV.
We'll do that, Megan. Thank you very much again, and I'll get Suzanne to hit you up sometime Monday or so next week, see if you're able to come on. If you are, that's fine. If not, I'll do my little spiel like I always say. It's going to be partly cloudy.
Awesome. Sounds Sounds good. Y'all have a good night.
You too, Megan. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Stephen, that was our weather lady out of Birmingham, ABC 3340, weekend meteorologist Megan Thomas. She's always good. Well, where do you want to start, Stephen? You got any breaking news you want to throw out or what you want to start talking about?
No, don't really have any breaking news. Nobody got penalized this weekend from Martinsville Speedway. That's a good thing. And a lot of exciting racing up there between the Truck Series and the Sprint Cup Series. But it's always a good race up there on the short track here in Virginia. We can always start with the Truck Series and roll through some of the stuff that went on through that. And I know it was a pretty neat little weekend with the Truck Series, and I'll let you handle that.
Okay, thanks, Bud. I'll handle the trucks, and then I'll give it over to you in just a minute. You can handle the Cup Series. Okay, NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, Saturday, October 25th, 2014 at Martinsville, Virginia. Driving an A-number 34 Kyle Busch Motorsports Toyota painted and numbered as a tribute to NASCAR Hall of Fame nominee Wendell Scott. And with Scott's family in attendance at Martinsville Speedway, pole sitter Darrell Wallace Jr. held off to win the Saturday's Kroger 200 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race at Martinsville. And then just to read off the top 10 finishers, of course your winner was Darrell Wallace Jr., second place Timothy Peters, third place Matt Crafton, fourth place Eric Jones, fifth was Ryan Blaney, sixth was Tyler Reddick, seventh was Johnny Sauter, eighth was Matt Tiff, ninth was Alex Brunette, 10th was Jermaine Kurgo. And average speed of the race was 60.4, average speed of race winner, 60.498 miles per hour. Time of race, 1 hour, 44 minutes, 20 seconds. Margin of victory was 0.495 seconds. There was caution flags. There was 11 for 71 laps. Lead changes was 9 amongst 5 drivers. And here's the little rundown of the points after Martinsville, after the 16th annual running of the Kroger 200. The points leaders still Matt Crafton. Second place is Ryan Blaney, 10 out. Third place is Darrell Wallace Jr., 22 out. Johnny Sauter, fourth place, 40 out. And Timothy Peters rounds out your top five, 77 out. And with three races left, you got the Texas Windstar World Casino Resort 350. Then you got the Phoenix Lucas Oil 150. And then the Homestead, the last race of the season for the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series Ford EcoBoost 200. You can just about, you don't know what's going to happen, but from fifth place back, our good friend Timothy Peters, we had him on the show last week. He's 77 out. He's probably just stick a fork in him, Stephen. But that's a little bit of what I got on the Camping World Truck Series side, and you can handle the Sprint Cup, bud.
Yes, it's Sunday at Martinsville Speedway. We had the Sprint Cup Series in action there for 500 laps there. Dale Earnhardt Jr. ended up winning his fourth race of the year. It was his 23rd victory in 538 starts in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series and his fourth victory in 18th top. 10 finished 2014. Only one time before has he won more races throughout his career, and that was in 2004 when he won 6 events throughout the year. This was also his first victory in 17th top 10 in 30 events at Martinsville Speedway. His previous best was second twice, once in 2008 and again in 2011. Jeff Gordon finished up second, posting his 35th, 44 events there at Martinsville Speedway. Ryan Newman finished up third, posting his 12th top 10 in 26 events there at Martinsville. And Jeff Gordon is leaving out of there, heading into Texas this week with a 3-point finish over Ryan Newman. There were 15 caution flags throughout the event and 2 red flags for multi-car pileups that happened during the race.
Yeah. And, you know, Stephen, me and you had talked about that up there after the race, about Junior winning. That sort of takes one of your three that could, which is now it's down to 2. You can only have 2 winners that automatically lock themselves in, and that takes away from 1. So 1 is going to make it on points. And if don't nobody else in the chase win, then you're going to have, there's all kind of scenarios that could go on now, correct?
yeah, at this point with Junior not being locked in, he was knocked out last week there at Talladega. You're coming into Martinsville, so he was not eligible to move on throughout this eliminator round. With him winning this event there, it now leaves two open spots for people in the points. So that means third and fourth in the points are going to be locked in by virtue of their points positioning. That's contingent upon the next 2 weeks that there is no more non-chase winners there. Brad Keselowski and Kevin Harvick both are back in the situation that they were here just a couple of weeks ago. Keselowski is seventh in points. Kevin Harvick is eighth in points. They've pretty much at this point control their own destiny by winning either this weekend in Texas or next weekend there in Phoenix. The point spread is, mathematically it's possible, but you know there's 42 other drivers out there in the field that could potentially wreck havoc in your day. And you know Harvick was one of those this weekend in Martinsville. Had a torn-up race car. It ended up in the garage, spent many, many laps down while the team worked on to it. Brad Keselowski also similar fate, rear-end gear failure on the car, which put him many, many laps down, dropping him to seventh in the points. So, you know, those two guys are, again, in a situation where they've got to win to get themselves in to move on into Homestead, and they only got two more chances to do so.
Yeah, you got that right, bud. And yeah, you were saying Brad and Kevin are back in seventh and eighth. You got, you said Jeff Gordon's lead, then you got Ryan Newman three out, Joey Logano four out, Kenseth five out, Denny Hamlin seven out. I mean, you know, my chase grid is all screwed up. But then you got Carl Edwards is sixth. He's 20 out, and then Brad's 31, Kevin's 33. We know more than likely Brad or Kevin has got to win. Do you think Carl Edwards needs to win to definitely lock him, or you think he might can make up some points?
You know, it's hard to say. You know, Carl Edwards this year is kind of like, almost like Ryan Newman. Both of them have not had a stellar year by any means, but both of them have been in a position to continue moving themselves on throughout this. You take a look at, Ryan Newman. He was quiet all day long at Martinsville Speedway. Didn't hear much out of him, and he ended up getting there third place right behind Jeff Gordon to put him second in the points. He continues that, him, and then back to Carl Edwards, you know, if he has a stroke of luck, and he's won at Texas Motor Speedway before, he's also won at Phoenix, so he's got two opportunities to lock himself in. It's just a matter of, you know, will he be able to put himself in position to do so in either of these events. So, you know, it's possible that he has a win at both the upcoming tracks that we're going to. So anything is really possible at this point. I think Jack Roush and those guys over there are probably doing what they can, that even though this is the last year at Roush Fenway Racing before moving over to Joe Gibbs. He's put himself in a position, and Roush Racing has put him in a position where they're trying to advance him on as far as they can to either win the Sprint Cup or be as far as up as possible when they get there into Homestead.
Yeah. And just jumping ahead a little bit, I mean, we can talk about this for days, Steve, but just jumping ahead a little bit toward this coming race up at Texas. The spring winner in the Cup Series there at the Duck Commander 500 was Joey Logano. And guess who finished second? Jeff Gordon. Do you think them two, I'm pretty sure they still got their notebook from this past spring. Just throwing that out there. I think Gordon is sitting pretty, but I really think he's going to have to win a race. He's going to have to win a race to get in, I think. Unless, you know, something happens back in here, you know, something can happen and just screw the whole field, the whole points thing up. I mean, you know, I really don't know what's going to happen. There's just so much I could talk about. That's why I'm sitting here sort of spitting and sputtering, because I got all kinds of things going through my mind. But do you think you're going to have to win to transfer, or you think, like we said earlier, you're going to have that one points thing? But I would rather win and go ahead and lock myself in, wouldn't you, heading into Homestead?
Well, absolutely. I think you would want to kind of lock yourself in there and just, you know, ride it out, you know, until you get to Homestead, and then, you know, give it your all. But, you know, at the same time, both Ryan Newman and Jeff Gordon sitting on top of the performance, 3 points away from one another. They both, you know, Jeff Gordon has won this year. He's won on multiple occasions throughout the year. Ryan Newman, as I said, he's been fairly consistent all year, even though he's not won a race. He's been able to be consistent week in and week out, staying out of trouble, haven't had any bad luck as far as the engineering or, you know, motors or anything like that on a car. Happen, and I don't want to jinx any of those guys going into the next couple of weeks. But those two guys, the way that they sit right now, kind of control their own destiny. If they continue to run like they have all year long, I think either of those guys won't have a problem moving on to Homestead. It's just they've got to keep themselves clean, not have any bad luck, you know, on the car, and, you know, hope to get there to Homestead. But as you said, you know, I would be one that want to try and win that race and get myself locked in so I can take a little breather before I got to Homestead.
Yeah, I would too. And it's going to really come down to, I think, a show enough knockdown drag out whenever we get to Homestead. But, you know, you had touched a little bit earlier, Stephen, you were talking about Cup Side. I can't remember if you mentioned it about Casey Kane and Brian Vickers having their little altercation there. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, it's short track racing at Martinsville Speedway. You know when you go in there that tempers are going to come out. It's not when, it's when it's going to happen. And Casey Kane and Brian Vickers throughout the entire day had been beating and banging on one another. Both of them paid each other back a couple of times. And eventually after the second time, NASCAR did tell them to cut the crap off and, you know, they went on. Casey Kane ended up being stuck in that last multi-car incident, which brought out the second red flag of the day, ultimately ending his day. Brian Vickers, you know, would go on to be several laps down. But, yeah, I mean, you know, that's just classic Martinsville for you. You know, the guys, it's such close-quarter racing in there. You can only run about one lane in the corners. Two and three wide doesn't work. And when those guys get a nose under one another and another one has the wrong angle, somebody's going to get spun, and somebody's feelings is going to get hurt, and ultimately they're going to feel they want to get a little bit of payback, and that's exactly what those two guys did.
Yeah, and, you know, just like you said, Steve, I mean, you know, short track racing, you're going to beat, bang, tempers are going to flare, just like, you know, I've talked about up at Bristol. I've been to Bristol 7 times. Suzanne's went with me, and I'm not dogging Bristol. But I want to give a big kudos to Martinsville. You know, that was my first trip there. That's some of the best short track racing I've ever watched in my life. I mean, that was real. I mean, it was racing.
Yeah, it's hard to beat a place like Martinsville and the short track because it reminds so many people of the local Friday and Saturday night tracks that they come from. The drivers come from this. The fans come from watching their local short track drivers, whether it be on dirt or asphalt, and this is just one of those tracks that reminds these guys, you know, all the fans and all the drivers out there where they came from. And, you know, it's just good close quarter racing out there throughout the entire event. Yeah, they get strung out a little bit and it becomes the conveyor belt around Martinsville. But that's going to happen on a half-mile racetrack, and that doesn't mean necessarily that there's bad racing at all. It just means that, you know, it's so close that you've got lap-down drivers, you've got drivers that are out there that have wrecked cars that are in the way, and it just makes it all the more exciting. And we saw that this week there at Martinsville. I mean, I had not seen an event at Martinsville in many, many years that had as many people show up as they did on Sunday, and that campground on the backstretch up on the hill was slam-packed. I did hear that somebody had said that the track did say that the camping on the backstretch was completely sold out, and I would say they were 4,000 or 5,000 seats of completely selling out that facility, and it only holds about 65,000 to 66,000 people.
I would too, Steve. I mean, you know where we sit. You know, we sit up in the press box, and you know, like you said, there were stands above us, behind us. But from where we sit, between 1 and 2, you could look toward the front stretch there at the flag stand. I mean, it was packed all the way at the other end, turns 3 and 4. It wasn't packed, but I mean, it was full. Like you said, that they really jammed. And you know, that's not to say all the people that drove up and didn't come into the racetrack and tailgated outside the track.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many people out there that, you know, I always find it funny with NASCAR fans is that they don't necessarily want to come to the race. A lot of them just, you know, drive up there, they want to tailgate, they want to have some fun, and they can do so, and it's, you know, cheap, easy entertainment for those fans that choose to sit in the parking lot. And, you know, if those fans would have come into the Speedway, I believe they would have sold that thing out. But, you know, they did a heck of a job getting those fans in there and selling out a majority of their tickets that they had, and the camping was all booked up in the back stretch. I mean, there wasn't an empty spot in the back there where the campers and stuff were that I could see. And, you know, they did a good job there, and I think a lot of that is, you know, the Chase is really just coming on strong these days. And between that, you also have you know, it's just local short track racing, and somebody wants to see if somebody's going to pay somebody back.
Yeah, exactly right, Steve. And, you know, we walked down through the pedestrian tunnel, you know, when we got there and went down toward the media center. And, you know, I was asking you about, you know, how in the world do they get all this? I mean, there's a certain spot for everything inside that infield. I mean, you know, everything has its certain spot because, I mean, it's like walking through a maze.
Yeah, there's not much room in that infield by any means. It's, you know, that infield is very small compared to a lot of other tracks. And you even take a look at somewhere like, you know, Bristol, where it has a larger infield, but they're able to still put a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff in that infield. But, you know, you take a look at it, and those guys, you know, the way they park those trucks in there and get all that equipment in there for the weekend, it's kind of like a puzzle piece. And they've been doing it for so many years that they've just kind of mastered that, you know, puzzle per se to get everything in there. Everything has a spot in there, and you really don't have much room to walk around in there, that's for sure.
No, you don't, because I mean, every time you walk around a corner, you're going to run into a driver, somebody from NASCAR, somebody in the media. I mean, it's zigzagging through there. And I was trying to think something else. You had mentioned about the infield, about I can't think right now, Stephen. But we're waiting on Tony B. He's going to come on here pretty shortly. But coming up this weekend at Texas, you know, we've got the. The truck race is Friday night, and nationwide race is Saturday evening. And of course, the Cup race is on Sunday. What do you think we're looking to see? Do you think there's going to be a lot of holding back, maybe trying to some of them that's higher up in the points, you know, sort of playing it safe, and the ones that's back there that's got to win? Do you think they're going hard charge, or do you think we're going to see all eight contenders hard charging, trying to get a win this weekend at Texas Motor Speedway?
Well, I think a lot of it is just because Dale Jr. won this past weekend at Martinsville, so that took a spot away of those that could get locked in going into Homestead. So I think you're going to see all eight of them out there going to give 110% to get up there and get that win or be as far up that they can in order to get some kind of points that you can, you know, for to get into Homestead. You know, the points championship there within the first couple of drivers, they're all so close together that they have no choice, you know, but to continue running up there as fast and as hard as they can each and every week, you know, especially with only two events left before you get to Homestead Miami. You know, I don't think anybody's going to lay back at all, but, you know, I could be surprised. You know, there can be some melees that happen there at Texas. It's a fast speedway, and maybe a few of them might want to hang back a little bit and see where they can get to, but I don't see them laying back too much. None of them can afford it at this point. You know, Jeff Gordon, Ryan Newman, those guys up the front, you know, they're so close together, and then you've got Harvick and Keselowski at the bottom there that they can't afford to do so, and definitely the guys in the middle that are going to be jockeying for position need to move up or move around or get a win. I don't think there's going to be much laying back. You can't afford it at this point, you know, with only two events left before the championship weekend.
Yeah, and while we're on Texas, I'll go ahead and read off the races. Friday, October 31st, 8:30 p.m. NASCAR Camper World Truck Series, WinStar World Casino and Resort 350, 147 laps, 220.5 miles. Fox Sports 1 has your TV coverage. Your radio is PRN and Sirius XM NASCAR Channel 90. And on Saturday, November the 1st at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, NASCAR Nationwide Series O'Reilly Auto Parts Challenge. 200 laps, 300 miles. ESPN2 has your TV. Radio is PRN and Sirius XM NASCAR Channel 90. And then Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, NASCAR Sprint Cup Series AAA Texas 500, 334 laps, 501 miles. Then again, ESPN has your coverage, PRN, Sirius XM Channel 90. So we got a Friday night race we can watch, and we got Saturday. We're going to flip back and forth between the race and football. I don't even let any look and see what time my team plays. But with that being said, Stephen, I had seen the other day, I think it was Wednesday, last Wednesday after our show, you know, we was all trying to get ready to go to Martinville. Kerry Tharp had put out that new the NASCAR Xfinity Series, NASCAR Camping World Truck Series to incorporate updates in 2015. Have you had time to look at some of that, Stephen, that the way they're going to I think it's a 32-truck maximum starting field, new qualifying rule among competition changes. Have you looked at it? I got it here, Stephen, but I hadn't even looked at it yet.
Yeah, you know, some of it I have taken a look at, but that was, you know, last week, so my mind kind of, you know, blurs between all the stuff that I post in between that. But, yeah, the truck series, they're going to reduce the field down next year, so that's going to take away a little bit of that. And then, you know, both the Xfinity series and the Camping World Truck Series are both going to go to a nameplate similar to what's on the Sprint Cup cars, except for they're going to be on the back windows of those vehicles, so that you can differentiate the drivers that are in the truck or the Xfinity car next year. So, you know, there's a lot of changes with that. The truck series, I don't think they really have a choice at this point to move the field down. We've had some problems this year about getting full fields out there, especially in the truck series, which isn't exactly a prize money filled series at all. I mean, you take a look at this past weekend there at Martinsville, Joe Wallace Jr. only won something like $33,000 for his win there. And you take a look all the way down the line, and, you know, last place is only winning about $5,000-$7,000. Well, you know, they've got to cut the fields. You know, the only way that they're just going to have to cut the fields down, you know, within that series, and make it a little bit more beneficial for those guys and girls that do show up on the weekend, and stop taking the money away from those last four or five that show up, run three or four laps. And, you know, there's not too many starting parks in the truck series. There's more of it in the Nationwide series than there is anywhere else. But, you know, the truck series needs to, you know, look at that, and that money needs to be reallocated to those that are showing up week in and week out. And I think this is one step that NASCAR has made in the right direction of, you know, giving the crews and every week a little bit more prize money and a little bit more, reason to show up on the weekends.
Yeah, I will definitely. And, you know, I'm sitting here looking at it now, Steven. You're talking about how much Darrell Wallace Jr. won. It was $38,195. Now, how in the world? I mean, I just don't see how them. And then, like you said, last place only won $6,405. How do you pay your bills with that? I mean, if you hadn't got a good sponsor, I don't see how some of them teams make it.
Well, I mean, you really can in the truck series, even with a good sponsor. Even with Darrell Wallace Jr., with Eric Jones, and Kyle Busch there at Kyle Busch Motorsports, those guys don't have sponsorship every single event. They just put Toyota on their trucks because they need a placeholder. They need something on the vehicle. Just if nothing more than to give the support back to Toyota and whoever is helping them out get to the track each and every weekend. Not necessarily that they're giving them any money, but it's just it's hard for those guys, and that's why you have a hard time in the truck series. You take a look at earlier this year with Red Horse Racing. They were fielding three full time teams. Found out that, you know, that's just economically feasible. They cut that down. Brian Eicher was the third truck in that stable, and he has run a couple races with him throughout the year, but it's nothing that they could sustain on a week in and week out. Even Turner Scott Motorsports this year, they've had to downsize, you know, whether it's because of, you know, whatever legal issues that they have going on there, or whether it's outside forces kind of lending their hand to the issue. but they've cut their truck series down. You even take a look at Brandon Jones. That this weekend he was running for somebody else this weekend. Normally he would have run for Turner Scott Motorsports, but he was in a different truck this week, totally different team, because it's hard to keep a truck on track, even with the field motors, with the cheaper parts, with the trucks that don't cost as much to take in and out, and with one day shows, it really makes it hard economically for everybody to, you know, show up there on the weekend.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, there's not that many starting parks in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. There's more in the nationwide, and I think I sent you an email. I told you to check something out this morning. Wasn't it Curtis Key Motorsports? Aren't they? They're selling their nationwide teams, and that number 40 nationwide team. They're selling it and going full time Cup next year, right?
Yeah, Curtis Key Racing, Curtis Key Motorsports is selling off all three of their teams. They have three teams: the 40, the 42, and the 46. That they field. The 46 is nothing more than a development, as far as, you know, to keep, and maybe a little bit of purse money to keep the other teams running. But they are selling all three of their teams off, the equipment, the cars, the engines, everything that they have, because next year they made a statement here just a few weeks back that they were going to make plans to move into the Sprint Cup Series. And this is going to be their first foray into the Sprint Cup Series in many, many years with Curtis Key. He's been in NASCAR throughout various series over the years, and most recently over the last 8 or 10 years has been running in the Nationwide Series with 2-3 teams on and off throughout time. So, it just shows you what you have to do to move up in the series. And, you know, you got three teams out there that they have no choice but to sell off in order to move up. The Motorsports Group, which is Curtis Key and those guys, they haven't been overwhelmingly successful in the Nationwide Series over the years. They've got very lackluster support as far as who's on the car on the weekend. They've got some decent drivers that they've had in the cars over the years, but it's hard for them, even in the Nationwide Series, and I think it's going to be even harder when they get to the Sprint Cup Series.
Yeah, I will definitely agree, and I hadn't really seen much on it. I figured you might put some stuff on SpeedwayDigest.com about it sooner or later. Have you heard anything for our sponsorship details, Stephen, or they just hadn't mentioned nothing yet for the Cup side of it?
Well, as far as the Cup side right now, they haven't made really any announcements as far as whether it be sponsors or drivers or anything of that nature. I would suspect that one of the drivers that they've had with them this year may potentially move up with them into the Sprint Cup Series. But then again, you know, I'm not entirely sure either. It's hard to tell, and I guess we'll see when they show up in Daytona. And, you know, Daytona is a hard place for a new team to show up at with the qualifying the way that it is. And, you got 10, 11 days worth of racing out there. That's a huge expense out of your pocket, and hope that you can get through the qualifying, the duels, and everything else that come in. They even lead up into the Daytona 500. So we may or may not see them, even in the Daytona 500. It may be Phoenix the next week before they even are in the field. But, right now it's hard to tell. It's too easy. It's too hard to tell at this point on who will be in the car, who their sponsorship will be. If anything, I do believe that they will probably have Curtis Key Plumbing or one of their associate sponsors may be adorning the car through Speed Weeks and kind of go on from there.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking when we saw them same lines with you, Stephen. But, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people don't know how much it costs to fund even one nationwide team. You know, I was good friends with Aston Lewis Jr. that used to race, and back then was the Busch Series. And he told me what it costs to fund a one-year deal. And that was back then. God, I don't know how much it would cost to fund just a one nationwide team. And I know it's ungodly in the Cups, even. Stephen, do you have any figures? I hadn't heard about how much it recently cost to fund one nationwide team or one Cup team.
As far as the Sprint Cup Series is concerned, the last thing that I have heard, and I don't know if this is entirely correct because I don't have any hard figures, is that a lot of times it with coming in week in and week out is about $500,000 or so, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, God, that's just a lot of money. I think Steven's got Tony B in the screening room now. They probably discussing what he's going to talk about. But yeah, I think Ashton told me it was I can't remember what year it was. It's been a long time. I think it was like a $5 to $7 million just to run one team the whole year back then. So it's probably quadrupled that by now. Are you there, Steven?
Hey, bud. Sorry, you there?
Yeah, I got you, bud.
Hello?
I got you.
Oh, hey, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, what I was saying is that around $500,000 is the last number that I heard. I wouldn't even want to begin to guess on how much a nationwide series is. I know, you take a look at some of the high-profile teams like at Kendrick Motorsports, they're asking $15, $17 million a year to fund one team, and that's Jimmy Johnson, Jeff Gordon, and I've heard Dale Jr. can go as high as $22 to $25 million per year. And that's a top-notch team. It's a lot when you go into you figure one car fully dressed, ready to roll, is about $250,000. That they've got to drag to the track each week, and that's just hoping that you don't bend it, break it, blow a motor, or anything of that nature. Leasing engines, you can't afford to really buy engines anymore, for yourself. You have to lease them away from, either Hendrick, RCR, Roush, somebody like that, or Penske, or whoever it may be out there, Toyota and things like that. And that's a significant cost right now that I've heard that can be, $50,000 to $75,000 an engine for one weekend, and that's a huge investment right there. And the Nationwide Series is, I think that's why you get a lot of starting parkers, is because you have a car out there that I would figuratively say if a Sprint Cup car is $250,000 or so, give or take approximately, you're still talking at $100,000 plus car week in and week out that you got to take to an event, and usually you've got two cars along with you. Most of these teams do. Along with the engines, the transportation costs, and everything else that comes along with it, it's a fairly expensive to take. As somebody told me once before, if you want to make a small fortune in racing, start with the large one.
Yeah, you got that right, Steven. Yeah, man, I don't see how some of these teams make it. But anyway, Steven, at this time, we've got my good friend Tony B. Indy 500 champion crew member, and we want to bring Tony on the show right now, the Pit Stop. Tony B, how's everything up in Indianapolis, bud?
It's been a little rainy, a little cool, but other than that, it's not too bad. It just gives us reason to go to California here at the 1st of November and do some racing. And I was listening to you and Steven talk about cost. I personally know that we had a driver when I was IndyCar racing coming towards the end of his contract. And what he had to carry over into the contract for a 16-race deal was only $10 million, and he was told that's not enough, we gotta let you go. And that was a very famous driver that drives for somebody else, and $10 million wouldn't cut it for a season for a driver that is employed by somebody else and doing it okay.
Yeah. Golly, me and Steven were talking the money, and just the everything that goes into it, how much it costs to get your chassis, how much it costs to put the body on the car, the motor, the traveling, the paying the crews. I mean, gosh, I don't see how some of them do it, Tony.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, Steven was very wise, and and stating the cost of the car, the maintenance of the car, the motors, the crew members, the engineers, everything that you can think of. It's, you know, you're running close to $1 million a program. And that's not real hard to, and, you know, the bottom line is these guys are in it to make money and doing the best that they can.
Yeah, you're right, Tony. And, I got to listen to Terry Labonte speaking in the media center at Talladega Super Speedway weekend before last, and he was somebody asked him a question about cost and how much difference it was back then. He said, "Well, one thing I can tell you," he said, "if you mentioned engineer back then when I was driving, we didn't have no engineer." He said, "Now they've got two and three engineers." Can you hear me, Tony B?
Yeah. Yeah, cut out there. You guys have bad weather down your way.
No, it might be I got this new remote headset. I might have leaned back and got too far away from my USB plug-in.
Oh, that's okay. That's quite all right. I missed
but,
a bit,
anyway,
but that...
Yeah, Tony, I'm going to hand you over to Stephen for just... Give me about 2 minutes. TD's got to make a pit stop.
Okay, good deal.
All right, I'll be right back. Steven?
All right, bud, I got you for a couple minutes here. So, we were talking a little bit on the cost, and I know you being in the IndyCar series, there were, even before NASCAR, before engineers showed up in NASCAR, they were in the IndyCar series, and I know you
right.
see with Ganassi and those guys, would bring along multiple engineers throughout the weekend, and you take a look at the Sprint Cup series, or even like a low-level series these days. Like, you know, I've seen them at the K&N series where, you know, Roush Yates will send engineers down to take a look at these motors, and you can even see how much of the cost is going into that when they've got to lease these motors and bring these guys down there as part of that lease deal and pay them to be there and put them up and things of that nature. You know, there are guys out there like Ryan Newman that has an engineering degree. Think anything that can be done in any of the series to kind of cut that out and maybe limit the engineering that goes into these cars week in and week out, or is it just a natural progression as we move forward with technology?
I'm afraid it is a natural progression in technology, but I feel the same way you do, and somehow we've got to take it back a little ways, but I'm going to tell you what, you know, when I was at Ganassi on race day, you would have 10 people from Honda there just for a power plant in one car. And, you know, everything, when I did tires, you know, I did my job behind the pit wall. When they went on the car, as soon as the car moves, it tells the engineer or one of them exactly what the status was of that tire when it went on the car, letting them know if I'd done my job and properly. And I mean, they're everything that you can think about. The aerodynamics of the car. You wouldn't believe how much money and time they spend testing in a tunnel where the air is. They know exactly what it's doing and will do 200 runs in an evening just to change a little here or a little there. You know, it's just incredible. And that's how these guys get to the front and stay there. But the cost of that is, I mean, we're losing sight of what we're trying to do. And I wish we could go back to the day of, back when I was in ASA, we had crate motors. And, you know, there was nothing you'd done to the motor. It put it back on the driver. And those drivers, if they weren't good, they had to get better. And because all the cars were the same. And I miss the series for everybody driving the same car. I forget what the series name was. They changed so many cars, but it was the IROC series. But I think the last cars they had were Dodge Daytonas. But that really gives you a good feeling for how people can go out and compete in the same kind of vehicle. And, I'm afraid that the cost is really going to do us in on the team's wife. And the bottom line, Stephen, just like you just got back from Martinsville, you wouldn't want to go there and watch 22 cars run. We need that 43-car field, and one of these days that's going to be hard to obtain.
Yeah, as the cost continues to skyrocket in all of the series, and you talking about tires, is on any given weekend, even if it's a small track like Martinsville Speedway or even the bigger track, I mean, they've got 15, 20 Goodyear engineers standing around that do nothing but roll those tires around, do every kind of measurement known to man, take all kinds of telemetry and things of that nature and take that back to Goodyear. And then they've got a pile of engineers at Goodyear that don't even show up to the track, and they put all their engineering into it. But, yeah, I unfortunately, I feel that without a curb in some of this technology, I feel that NASCAR may end up like the F1 series where, it's $100 million a year to run a race team. And we've got 25 cars out there on any given weekend. And without some kind of curbing of the rules to cut down on this, we will see into the future, maybe 5, 10, however many years down the road, that these fields are going to continually dwindle, or we're going to have more and more starting parkers, or we're going to have NASCAR saying, well, we don't need 43 cars out here anymore. We only need 38 cars out here because it's just not sustainable any longer.
Well, I totally disagree with that. I agree with what you're saying. It's going to happen. And I know you've heard me talk many times in the past of NASCAR, go back to running maybe 3 or 4 dirt races a year. Take it back. Take the cars back to stock. Make them look more like a car that we drive so that people can go, that car is good looking. I want that car at home. You can want Jeff Gordon's car at home, but you're not going to get anything that looks like it. And, I just think they need to put it back and spin it back a little bit and get down to the level of the people that support them and where the money is. And the people that sponsor these cars and teams, they need people that kick back and give back to them. Well, you got to hit a home run with them, and you got to make them want and understand what you're doing. And we're losing sight of that.
Yeah, most definitely. The corporate sponsorship keeps this ball rolling week in and week out. Everything from anything that they can sponsor on a weekend is sponsored on a weekend. No matter what series that you're in, even IndyCar, every series out there. And unfortunately, without the sponsors, the show wouldn't continue to go on like it is. But, there needs to be some kind of curbing across all series on what might or can be done to kind of slow this down, make it a little bit more economical. We all know racing is expensive no matter what you do and where you go. But, there are small things that could potentially make it easier on a weekend for these teams, to not be economically out of pocket and forced to the point that you may, when Dale Jr. asks $25 million a year for sponsorship, that's, mm-hmm. We're getting to a point that it's very expensive to do.
It wasn't as bad at most places. Most places, venues that we would go into, we would have 8 or 9 sets of tires for the entire weekend. But when you go to Indy for 2 weeks, 35 sets of tires. And, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out how much cost, engineering, and work go into the tires. And it's incredible. And that's a small thing when you think about the engineering that goes into Honda, Chevrolet, you know, and the people that it takes to show competition in that level, how many people you got to take to the track. So I'd like to see it scaled back some and run it, you know, like we used to. And, you know, everybody loves to see those cars go 200 miles an hour in Atlanta. But I can tell you, if every show was like Talladega and the first lap looked like the last lap, they're all that close together, that's what we need week in and week out. And you get into Talladega because of the drafting and the packs, the way they run. That's one thing Talladega has and is offers up to people is real racing. You know, those cars are running 200 mile an hour, but you could throw a fish net around 10 of them at any time. And I think that's important.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I do know the one few things that I do know in cost is a good set of Goodyear Eagles that go on those Sprint Cup cars or even Nationwide Series cars are $2,000 a set. And Goodyear says you got a maximum number of sets, and you also got a minimum number of sets. And even some of these smaller teams where they show up to an event where they say, well, you're going to need 8 sets of tires. Well, that's 8 sets times $2,000. That's $16,000. That's before you even put the car on the track. And at the end of the weekend, if you don't use those tires, they go back to Goodyear. You paid for the tires, so you might as well just go on and use them up, whether you put
one lap or
5 laps.
Well, with Firestone and IndyCar, let me tell you, you have got to turn those tires back in or you don't leave. And if there is a caution and a tire is damaged to where the case is cut, they cover that dude up and it all but goes off pit road with a guard because it's that critical. And there's a lot of money there, and they don't want nobody else knowing how they put that tire together.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, you know, it kind of goes back to one thing that I do know about, and again, I'm more of a NASCAR specialist engineer than an IndyCar specialist, but I can tell you in NASCAR is that, you know, the same thing happens with Goodyear tires. You see how fast they go off a pit lane when they destroy those tires. And the other thing is that, you know, you go to an event on a weekend at NASCAR, any event out there, National Touring Series out there, and one thing that they always tell you is that in those photo meetings, do not ever take a picture of a motor. Never, ever, ever take a picture of a motor. They will take your camera away from you, delete those pictures because, again, the engineering, they don't want anybody to know how those motors are put together, what kind of parts they may or may not be using into them, and what kind of experimentation that they may be trying with some of these teams that may not, maybe
exactly.
Not a Jeff Gordon or a Dale Earnhardt, but maybe somebody that runs mid-pack, you know, they may be experimenting with those motors, and they don't want their competition to know what's going on.
No, and I found out firsthand, and I got to live life by the highest and win the biggest races in the history of motorsports. But everybody thinks that Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, Casey Kane, and Dale Earnhardt all those engineers might sit at a table, but let me tell you, they all play games against one another. And just because Johnson is running one setup and doing well, that doesn't mean the other three cars got that setup from them. some things are shared, but some things are not. And the crew chiefs and the engineers, they want to win. And it's not shared. Those setups aren't shared like you would think that they are.
Yeah, most definitely. And I'm going to turn you back over to Tim. I think he's sitting on the sidelines trying to get into this conversation.
Okay. Hey, Steve.
No, I'm back. I'm back. I went to the pit stop. I took two right sides, two cans of Sunoco fuel, and two rounds down on my track bar. I'm ready to go now.
Wow, you're good to the green.
I'm good to the green. Suzanne told me to she's gonna take some air pressure out too, so I think that helped me too. Anyway, I'm back, and Stephen, thank you for relieving me there for a minute. I know you have to go because you got a lot going on. You want to put out anything out there about where everybody can follow you at and what you got going on with SpeedwayDigest.com and Twitter and all that stuff? You got the floor, bud.
Yes, it's we update the site 2-3 times a day at SpeedwayDigest.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at SpeedwayDigest. We're done for racing as far as this year being at live events. Three races left in NASCAR in both the Camp World, Nationwide, and Sprint Cup Series. So, I won't be going to any more races, but, we're itching to have a good championship come down to Homestead here in the next couple of weeks. And I appreciate you guys, having me on again tonight. And it's good being at Martinsville with you this weekend, Tim. We had a lot of fun out there, and hopefully we can do it next year.
Yes, sir, we will. I want to tell you, too, very glad to meet you and Miss Ann Marie. Want to meet the kids one day. Suzanne had a blast, too. And if I don't see I know I'll see you in Richmond. We're going to be at Spring Race in Richmond. But, had a blast, bud. I would love to do that again.
Yes, sir. Y'all take it easy. Have a good night.
You too, right, Steven. Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was my good friend, Steven Wilson, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com. We went and spent the weekend with them in Marvel. We had a blast, Tony. We had a blast. Tony, I want to bring on Todd. Todd's been sitting here waiting. I didn't get to bring him on last
Todd
week because we had so much. Yeah, Todd's sitting here waiting. We're going to – let me see. Here we go. We're going to bring Todd on.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Okay, Todd, how's everything going in upstate New York, bud?
Going good. We had a nice 70-degree day today.
Well, good, good. And I want to apologize for not answering you the other day when you called, but I was in the press box and I couldn't answer my phone.
No, that's totally fine, bud. I wasn't sure, so that's why I was just checking. But I'm
okay.
Glad to hear you guys had a good time.
We had a blast, Todd. I got to eat my first Martinsville hot dog. Like I said earlier, Stephen bought five or six. He wouldn't come off of but one, so I got one. But you're talking about good. That's the best hot dog. I mean, I don't know how you could make a hot dog taste that good, but that's some gun.
Is that right?
Hear me say it. Yeah, it was some count, y'all. But anyway, Todd, you're in here with Tony B. I was going to let y'all talk a little bit, and I'll step over to the side because I've been running my mouth the whole first part of the show.
All righty. Mr. Tony B, finally nice to get to chat with you.
Yeah, how are you tonight, Mr. Todd?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. Been busy helping some elderly people and some friends.
Well, that's always a good thing. Have you seen any racing?
Just on TV. We did go to the Glen this year, which, I know you got to see the picture.
Right. Yeah. Loved them.
We're getting things set up for next year for at the Glen.
Oh, yeah. Do you think that they are going to, and, when they televised it, they spoke a lot about it, but there are some areas there in the track that they don't have safety walls, and there are problems. And the great crashes that they've had, right before pit road in the flag stand where it comes off the corner and kind of go through a chicane. And are they going to do something different for that for the year of 2015?
Well, from talking and hearing from Ryan Newman, and, you know, because that accident happened just above where we were sitting. We were on the last turn before the straightaway where everybody kept hitting the same barrels. I do believe, you know, that they really need to put some more safety into it to be a, to be, to me, 100% safety track.
Right.
I love the track. I even drive my vehicle around it for autism for opening weekend. And there are a lot of corners that really do need that safety barrier and make it so that it's protected enough so these guys don't get hurt. I'm so
right.
glad Ryan walked away from it as bad as it was.
Exactly.
You know, and it's scary.
Well, yes, it is scary, and that's why the tracks, the sanctioning bodies, the venues are working so hard on the safer barriers, and that's why people like me and Paul Cleveland and the Despains all have part of Brace Yourself and trying to put a better device on the drivers so they can be accountable in car, drive hard, and not risk being injured due to a poor device. So, you know, we work towards that, and we just keep hammering away, Todd. And, you know, I live in the Midwest right now, and me and my personal assistant, my son, you know, everybody would think in the Midwest, racing season's over. Well, it's just getting to where we got to travel a little further. We're going to end up in New Mexico, Tulsa, Oklahoma, in California, you know, and then back to Fort Wayne, the Indoor Rumble Series, and down to Florida to Ocala. And we're going to burn up some miles in the next few months, but I guarantee you one thing, I'm going to be sitting in Talladega, Alabama with the Despains come the first race in 2015 at Talladega.
Well,
you come on down, bud. You come on. We got you the perfect bed and everything upstairs, and we're going to cook some bacon because we love bacon, and you come on down whenever you want to, Tommy.
Oh, I'm going to, brother, and I'm bringing them rings because I can't wait to picture them on you.
Thank you very much. Anyway, I'll let y'all get back to talking. I just want to jump in there. Y'all go ahead.
Okay. So what you got on your agenda there, Mr. Todd?
Well,
you got your races coming up or anybody you're helping or anything you want to talk about?
Well, pretty much our racing's done. I'm sure you remember Jeremy Clemens.
Oh, yeah.
And Jeremy Mayfield.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, Jeremy Mayfield is running a dirt car on my birthday.
Oh, outstanding.
And the last race of the year is 2 days after my birthday.
Fantastic.
So I look forward to the end of the year races.
Yeah, okay. Well, that makes good sense, and I completely understand that. And I look for the time and the day that Mr. Mayfield is let back into motorsports on a NASCAR division.
Yeah, he had that on Facebook. I was checking out. I'm glad to hear that. I have a bunch of his cars. Of course, I have a huge collection, so I try keeping
cool.
up with a little bit of everybody.
I'm sure you do. I've got I've got more than I should have. I've got the metal one whole side of Jimmy McMurray's car, and got the top off of one of Franchitti's cars, and you know, it's just stuff that you end up with and doing what we do. And but you know, now we're visiting motorsports from go-kart racing all the way to F1, and just trying to help people and give back to what has been given to us all these years, and help save lives and take care of people. And let me tell you, the Pit Stop radio show and Stephen Wilson and Tim and Suzanne Despain, they do so much to help people. And they've got a wonderful show, and it's the best there is. And I'm just so proud that we've got good listeners like you, and we can talk.
The thing, you know, like I've told probably Susan and Steve before, Tim before, even Steve, because they do such a show, guys like me who live way up in New York, far away from them, can still enjoy a show like what they do. And, you know, I'll be able to talk to great people like you. So,
well, I appreciate that, but I'm just like you, my friend, and been very blessed by God, and we just want to give back. And, you know, I love paying back, and this show is such a big part of it, and people like you, you know, when he said he had somebody coming on, I didn't know, but I guessed it was Todd Bixby. And I love that you follow me on, I believe, Twitter and Facebook. And, you know, we're going to get out there, and we're going to get a lot of stuff given to a lot of people here before too much longer. And you're on the top of my list, Todd.
Well, I appreciate that. Give you a little heads up so you know ahead of time. In the spring, me and my fiance are getting married at a microrod track.
Awesome.
It's 1 mile up the road from our house. So it's been an exciting year, and I wanted to do a racing wedding. So,
that's incredible and awesome.
So, yeah, ever since I became disabled, I mean, I went into, got in my NASCAR, and I just got into it full bore. And, you know, I follow a lot of different people in different series, and it's amazing on what these young kids are doing.
Yeah. Yes, it is amazing. And, you know, I just love telling them, and, you know, maybe sometimes somebody thinks, well, I've got to say the same thing all the time. It's important to me that we give it to the kids that are coming up, let them run through the series, and when they finally make it to the big show, they've got fans with them, they can carry good sponsors, and they can make decent money and provide us with the entertainment that we so desire with motorsports. It's the most dangerous job, but it's very rewarding. And, you know, it's my life, and I live it. And my son, Steven, my assistant, he lives it, and it's a great life. And thank God for people like you and the Despains and Steven and Anne-Marie, and we just keep doing it.
You know, and, you know, as for as long as this show goes on the air, you know I'll be on the other end listening.
That's awesome.
Todd, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Todd. Todd, is anything you would like to put out about what y'all doing for autism? Anything y'all got going on around your neck of the woods coming up? Or you can let everybody know about what you are doing and where they can follow you at on Twitter and Facebook and all that.
In the spring for opening weekend at the Glen, we're going to be driving the Blazer around the track for autism, $25 for 3 laps. We do that, and then we do it again at the end of the year. And to me, you know, it's worth it because I get to drive on a track, and I know the money is going to a good cause. And we're still doing tabs for Kids with Cancer out of Florida for Darian Martin Racing. So if anybody wants to save tabs and help out kids and just get a good feeling knowing that you can help, that'd be awesome.
That sounds good, Todd. And, Todd, I want to thank you very much for being a great supporter, and I'm glad I finally got you on with you and Tony B.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thanks, bud. And thanks for listening and everything, Todd, and can't wait. Next week, we're going to have a guest. You know, me and Stephen and Suzanne and Marie, we got all tied up in this race weekend, and I told Stephen, I ain't even tried to find a guest yet. He said, don't worry about it. We'll just talk our way through it. So that's what we're doing. We'll get somebody next week. But thanks again, Todd, and we'll talk at you next week, bud.
Okay, thank you guys, and you guys have a wonderful week.
You too. God bless you, Todd.
God bless, Todd. Okay, Tony, that was Todd Biggs. I'm finally glad you got to talk to him. But what all's going on with Brace Yourself? I know you've I don't know if you got any big announcements. I know I've been seeing some stuff out there, and
there are some big things.
Paul Cleveland. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tony.
There are some big things that are about to take place and happen, and we're working on some sponsorship deal for the Chili Bowl, which is one of the biggest midget races in the world. They'll have anywhere from 500 to 700 midgets that will try to make the A main for that event. And
you're talking about vehicles, right?
Yeah. Midgets, yeah.
I'm just making it funny. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's all right. And we're working on that, and we're working on getting sponsorships laid and with race teams to help Team USA, me and Steven and Jen here in the United States. And we've got a great team with Paul Cleveland and Tim Macro running the V8 Supercars over in Australia, and Tina Sharp. They're doing a great job over there, and Brace Yourself is just really making its way, and there's a lot of new things that are yet to come out that's going to really turn the motorsports world around and really for safety to anybody that puts this device on, regardless of what they're wearing. We have made some changes, and there are several devices for however somebody wants to use it. And, you know, with your great help, and Tina Sharp has thrown out thank yous to the Pit Stop and your family for helping us, and we're going to have a foundation for injured race car drivers and their families, and a lot of good things come happening, and it's just Tony Baginski, Tim, and Suzanne Despain giving back, Paul Cleveland giving back, and a lot of good things happen, and you should be very proud of yourself.
Amen. Thank God bless you, Tony B. Thank you very much. You know, just like me and you had talked earlier, you know, I'm sort of giving back. You know, I'm doing this as a hobby. I enjoy what I'm doing. Suzanne enjoys what she's doing. Of course, you know, Stephen Wilson has his SpeedwayDigest.com, and, you know, me and him met.
He does a great job. Yep.
Yes, he does. And we formed this radio network, and it's really blew up thanks to Larry McReynolds and my good friend Steve Post at MRN. They've helped us out a lot. And, you know, like you said, if it wasn't fun, Tony, we wouldn't be doing it.
That's right. And, you know, we love motorsports, and we want to help it.
Yes, sir. And I can't wait to meet you and Jim when y'all come to Talladega. And we might ease up there for the Brickyard 400 one day, maybe next year. I don't know. Suzanne says, I need to quit making these plans for these races. She said, I'm not driving to Martinsville next year, Tim. We're flying. I said, yes, ma'am. That's a long drive.
Well, it's only eight hours.
Yeah, it was supposed to spend 8 hours to South Boston where we stayed. And, of course, we hit lunch hour in Atlanta Thursday. They had a wreck somewhere. We caught rush hour in Charlotte. And then it got dark. But coming back yesterday was super. Of course, you know me. I got a little bit lead-footed, told Suzanne. I said, if you don't want to look, don't look, because I'm going to Alabama. But I brought her on back, brother. But anyway, coming up here, Tony B, go ahead and put out where everybody can follow you and about Brace Yourself, and we'll end it up, bud.
Well, anybody that wants to follow Tony Baginski at Facebook.com, I welcome you. And I'm also Tony Baginski 1 at Twitter. And also Brace Yourself. At Brace Yourself is on Twitter, and www.braceyourself.com online. Reach out, seek us, send us messages. Let us know what you want to see, what you want to be, and we'll help you in every way that we can. Myself, my son Steven, we are working so hard to give back to motorsports. And if there's anything you need or want, Tony and Steven and Paul Cleveland from Brace Yourself will reach out there and help you get it done. And I thank you, and God bless you all for listening. And I'll throw it back to you, Tim, and it's been a great evening.
It sure has, and thank you very much. But for our listeners, some of them that do not know, tell them about your two championship rings if you got just a minute, Tony.
Well, I am very fortunate. Won the Indianapolis 500 in 2012 with Dario Franchitti, and Scott Dixon finished second. And I also won the Pit Stop Championship at 2012 for the Izod Indy Cars. And then I went on to win in 2013 with Juan Pablo Montoya, Scott Pruitt, Memo Rojas, and Charlie Kimball. We won the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona in 2013. I've been with some very good teams and very blessed to work for Earnhardt and Ganassi Racing, which is now Ganassi Racing. Earnhardt has left away, but all those people are good people, and it's been a good long ride, and spent many years with ASA as National Safety Director, and has brought me to where I am with safety with Brace Yourself. And I'd like to thank you guys for giving us the time.
You're welcome very much, Tony B. I'm sure you had a hell of a ride. Thank you very much, Tony. Have a good evening. Tell Miss Jen we said hello. Tell Stephen we said hello, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday, bud.
Straight away. See you. God love you.
God love you too, bud.
Some Chicago wind, some Kansas wheat fields I'd love to see again. But the fireflies play where the cattails grow, and them southern girls, they talk nice and slow with kisses sweeter than Tupelo. Honey, little bit crazy like New Orleans,
Southern girl.